Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Pod Yourself a gun, a Sopranos podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Sopranos and talk about it. We analyze it. We dive deep into all of the art. Vince and I are big fans of art. We like to consume it, and we're very smart people, as you can tell if you've ever listened to this podcast.
I'm a professional critic, damn you.
You actually are.
Yeah.
And that's the sad thing about you having me as your co-host, because I am not a professional.
Look, there's
critic.
Nothing professional about us. There's no secret sauce.
That's true. There's nothing at all. You just kind of, one day, you buy a little Zoom recorder, and you're like, fine, I'll watch a show. And then
I meant about critics, but yeah, same deal.
I feel like every critic that I've met other than you is just the critic from The Simpsons.
It's like, I feel like to be a critic, there's a requirement that you don't understand contexts of things. So, mm-hmm. you know, you watch like an action movie and then you criticize like the lack of character development or something
right.
like that. You
know? Yeah, it's exactly.
Like, they don't try to understand what the thing wants to be. They just criticize mm-hmm. whatever they think it should be.
Yeah. I don't understand the subtext of Aquaman. Kill yourself. today, our guest is an activist. She works with the Working Families Party, a New Yorker. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Nalini Stamp. How you doing, Nalini?
I'm good. How y'all guys doing?
I'm so
happy to be on this.
I'm really happy that you're on this. You were, we have a mutual friend who was a previous guest, Raphael, and said you should be on this podcast because you're a huge fan of The Sopranos. And we are like, hell yeah, dude. We saw that blue check mark and we're like, oh, hell yeah.
You know, Matt lost his blue check for impersonating Joe Biden.
No, I did not impersonate Joe Biden.
Raphael was the one who got me my blue check.
So. Oh, damn. Well, maybe I need to ask him to get mine back. I lost my blue check mark because I impersonated the New York Times opinion.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah, that's right.
And it was right before they did their endorsement. Like, who are they going to endorse? And I just said I was New York Times opinion, and I copied all of their like header and their avatar. And I was like, you hogs know we're picking Warren, right? And everyone thought it was actually New York Times who called all the readers hogs. So
and then one of our listeners emailed us, and for Matt so loved posting that he gave his one begotten blue check mark.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
I mean it was better than what they did. So
yeah.
They decided to split their own vote.
However bad you thought their endorsement was going to be, they figured out a way to make it worse.
Yeah, you almost credit where credit is due. Who'd have thought that an endorsement could be so meaningless?
Yeah. Well, also, you can't endorse two people. Like, that's the number one rule of endorsements. It's not a fucking listicle. Yeah.
Yeah,
never
no.
Never done it if it was a man.
If it was a man, no
men,
way.
They would have never done it. So, yeah. Like, that's just awesome. Like,
we love women so much that we can't.
But.
Yeah. We so love women that we can't choose one. Okay.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah. I wish I could just pick all of them. Well, yeah. You can't. Yeah, it was pretty incredible because they were just like, what equals to one man, two women? So... Anyways, politics aside. No,
yeah.
never politics aside. Nalini, so you are a fan of The Sopranos. You just showed us you have season one on VHS. That's crazy.
Wow. A box.
It is the old box set of The Sopranos.
Wow.
Season one on VHS all the way through episode 13. So I've watched it since I was a kid. My family was never like, you can't watch, like,
yeah.
You can just cover my eyes if they you know, but I would, I could hear.
Yeah.
I've been a fan for a long time. And also my grandfather was actually a bookie for the mafia. So it's actually very close to
home. What?
Yeah. Old school Carroll Gardens bodega owner who, you know, we ran the numbers.
Nice.
You know, I don't think that I ever established my own bona fides, which was that my great grandfather was a bootlegger. May have been slightly connected, and he also died in the most Italian way possible, which was that
choked on spaghetti.
No, he was trying to watch an accordion concert in I forget which park in San Francisco. He was trying to watch an accordion concert, and he fell out of a tree, and he never recovered.
He died from falling. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, my mom's partner for a long time, the partner that raised me, she was Italian and Irish. Like off the boat, my granny was from fucking Cork, Ireland, and like family was from Sicily, like adopted wise. So I'm this like Puerto Rican Belizean woman who like I make Sunday dinners and I make the meat sauce all day.
Nice.
So like I'm very like I grew up with the Italian and Irish culture very much ingrained in me. So
That's beautiful.
I learned to say Bafangul before I said anything else.
Nice. That's my favorite. I love to tell people Bafangul, and you really gotta elongate the ghoul as long as you can. Bafangul! And then
all the symbols like this.
Yeah.
Like this, like,
oh, yeah.
There's always and yeah. People were like, what are you doing? You're Puerto Rican.
Yeah. It works.
Like, sure.
At this point, I don't think it's possible. Like, Italian culture has been integrated so hard into Americana that I don't think it's possible to do cultural appropriation of Italian Americans. I just feel like it's just, at this point, it's just fun, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Before we get into this episode, first things first, we are, of course, going to be playing you the theme song. But before you do that, since this is the season finale, I just want to one more time encourage every listener of this show to go on iTunes and please give us a 5-star rating and leave a review. Listen, it's a free podcast, right? You listen every week, and every week you just feed and feed. You're like a little parasite. Well, today I'm offering you a chance to stop being a little parasite and just give us a little review, you know? That's all we ask. Just go to iTunes Store.
You can be a maid listener. We'll give you your button.
Yeah, we'll give you your button. All you have to do is just give us those 5 stars and be like, hey, I like this podcast.
We'll give you your like button.
Exactly, exactly. So please do that. And without further ado, it is time to play the theme song.
You have to burn a picture of Matt's Twitter avatar in your hand. You have to let it burn in
right.
your hand.
That's like a saint? Is that like burning a saint?
Yeah, exactly. All right, theme song.
Pod. 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 Podcast. Pod. 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 Podcast. Oh, beautiful. Beautiful theme song. Should be an award-winning show. So today we are going to be talking about the season 2 finale of The Sopranos from season 2, episode 13, Funhouse. This episode premiered April 9th, 2000. And you know what, Vince? I think it's time that people heard a little bit of cultural context. What was happening around the time that this episode came out?
Oh, are you talking about the Remember When machine?
I am talking about the Remember When machine.
What? Walk, Teddy, Daddy, Bob, Bob, Shoe, Bob. Remember then.
Remember when it's the lowest form of conversation.
I knew you'd sneak in a record scratch sound effect on me.
You know, I am new at audio editing, so.
Yeah, that's your star wipe. We're going all the way back to April 9th, 2000, 20 years ago. Some of the headlines of the day on that day from the New York Post. Thins no longer in for British models. A war against waifish supermodels has been declared by the British government, which claims the fashionable ultra-thin look has turned healthy women into sickly basket cases.
What the fuck? This is, I'm sorry, did you say this was the New York Post?
That's the New York Post, yeah.
Interesting. Wow. So they're definitely coming from the perspective of, like, they're taking away our freedom to make women scared of being fat. That's,
yeah.
They're definitely coming from that perspective, where they're all for the libertarian idea that media should bully women into getting skinny.
Britain's women's unit fired the first shot by ordering top fashion and modeling bosses to a super waif summit to discuss rising mental and health problems faced by young women as they try to slim down. Officials say the looks of reed thin models like Kate Moss and posh spice Victoria Beckham encourage girls to starve themselves, leading to mental illness, lack of confidence, and self-harm.
That's interesting. It's like that is because that's true. And it is something that I feel like, you know, there was like a time when it felt like Britain was a place where they were a few light years ahead of the United States in terms of like, it just seemed like a more of a liberal place. And now I feel like they're just a few years or a few months more reactionary right wing than we are. Yeah. Like they do
gravy drenched reactionaries.
Exactly. A bunch of boiled chicken reactionaries. Just people who think that cabbage is food. Cabbage is fine. Yeah, that's interesting. What else was going on?
Trial due for psycho suspect in George Harrison stabbing.
Oh shit.
Do you remember that George Harrison got stabbed? I did not.
Yeah. So George Harrison was stabbed by someone who like broke into his estate.
Yeah. Cops say Abram broke into the stately mansion in Henley-on-Thames, England, owned by the ex-Beatle, and attacked them with a knife. During a violent and bloody struggle that lasted nearly 10 minutes, Harrison, 56, eventually overpowered the intruder after his wife smashed Abram over the head with a table lamp.
God damn.
So, yeah. George Harrison, tougher than you'd expect.
Yeah, people would not expect me to be so tough, but I'm a very tough man.
George Harrison also was in Staten Island for his cancer treatment.
Oh, wow.
Was he?
I didn't know.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
I like to go to the best hospitals with the most Guidos. I want Guidos and Jews. I do.
I'm sorry. Excuse.
That's what I want.
Anyway,
I feel like he might have the most good songs as a solo artist of all the Beatles.
Yeah, I mean, he was the one Beatle who, like, probably interpersonally wasn't a piece of shit. like Paul McCartney and John Lennon just took turns just competing with each other about who was had the bigger ego. And I'm pretty sure Ringo had some interpersonal problems, too. But George Harrison was just like, I really like to watch Monty Python.
Ringo always seemed like he was owning his like D-list celebrity fame. Like he was an early adopter of like, I feel like he would have been on like the Surreal Life or like that.
He would have been like a contestant on the Hollywood Squares.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. I'm sure he has been. Also, Vijay Singh won the Masters.
That's about it.
Yeah, that's about it for it.
What were the top movies of the time?
Top movies. Rules of Engagement, which that was, of course, I actually saw that in the theater. That was about they were playing. It was kind of like they almost predicted Benghazi. There was like a protest at the U.S. consulate in Yemen. And then and it was like a courtroom drama where they found out the Arabs actually did have guns. And so they were justified in their massacre of them. Yeah.
Wow.
Great movie. Wow. Aaron Brockovich, number two, Road to El Dorado, Return to Me, The Skulls, and Ready to Rumble, which was, you know, they figured out how to make Michael Buffer earn more money. So good for him.
Yeah. Yeah. The Ready to Rumble was the Arquette movie, right?
Yeah. David Arquette and Scott Kahn, buddy comedy about pro wrestling, I believe.
Sick. What were the top songs?
It's still the same ones. It's still Maria Maria by Santana. Ooh, featuring the Product.
Remind me of West Side Story. I love that part. It did remind me of West Side Story. Okay, so that was what was going on in the time that this episode came out.
Do you guys feel contextualized? I feel so culturally contextualized.
I feel full of context.
I'm in it. Little eyebrows, like, you know.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. Why were the eyebrows so small?
Yeah, there was a time when eyebrows couldn't get, they were like, if they could not be there, we'd be happy. You know, they were just like, we want little eyebrows, which is fine. You know, hey, that was the time, you know, they wanted everything thin. But now we get into The Sopranos. And Vince, can you break us off a little piece of the synopsis?
Oh, sure. In the season two finale, Tony has a series of fever dreams that help to shed light on some of his problems, particularly his troubles over Big Pussy.
That's right. So this
Salvatore.
Yeah, Salvatore, yeah. Big Pussy Bombancero.
You broke my heart.
Hey, I'm spying for the FBI over here. so this episode is the long-awaited mafia whacking of Sal, Big Pussy, Bombancero. And let me just real quick list down some of the Bada B stories that happened in this episode. Excuse me. Just got to clear my throat for this. Pussy sleeps with the fishes. Tony, sick from two dishes. Artie defends his delicious. Jersey sells phony minutes. Carm wears mink from the riches. Livia flies with her sisses. FBI creep because they're vicious. Meadow graduates high school.
Chef's kiss. You got the chef's kiss right there.
Mwah, beautiful. You know, I figured it's the finale. I really have to have Bada B stories just, you know, I got to have them on point. And what can I say other than bars? So, yeah, let's start talking about the plot of this episode.
So finally.
Yeah.
Finally, we get rid of Big Pussy. It was like, if you're rewatching this at the same rate we are, I mean, we were kind of, they really dragged out this storyline, felt like.
Yeah. It's when the first time you watch it, it is probably the most compelling storyline because you care about what is going to happen. You know, you love Big Pussy Bombancero. You know that he's a snitch, but you kind of don't want him to die. You kind of hope he's going to escape it. And after the last episode where they kill Richie Aprile, or where Janice kills him, you kind of think, you know, that he might be home safe because they're just like, hey, they already killed someone.
Well, also,
they can't kill another guy. Right?
Well, and last episode, was it last episode where he crashed the car, or was that the episode before?
Yeah, you know, it was last episode. Yeah.
It was the last episode.
So they kind of set up like this climactic way that Tony might find out that he was working for the government, and then that's not how he finds out in this episode.
No, he finds out from a fish that he had a dream about. he dreams about, yeah, he dreams about walking on you know, the Atlantic City boardwalk, and a talking fish just tells him, "Hey, I'm working for the government."
I'm pretty sure that's Asbury Park too.
Oh, is it
actually? Because that thing that was like empty is like a really, it's like a little market at Asbury, a couple blocks from the Stone Pony.
I'm interested.
That's the birthplace of Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce Springsteen, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Look at that. You know your facts. I know.
Yeah, I
know.
Saw that movie about Bruce Springsteen, the one where the little Indian kid dreams of being Bruce Springsteen.
Wait, did that happen?
Yep.
Because there also, did that come out around the same time as Yesterday?
No. So yeah, exactly. It was like 2 months or a month before Yesterday. It was very Volcano Dante's Peak.
Yeah. Very Ants of Bug Life. But yeah, it's I know nothing about the East Coast. So like anytime anyone can, you know, just give me a little bit of like where things are and what's going on, then it always is helpful. So
the sun rises over the water over there. It's weird.
I heard that the sun comes up there. Yep. But then it sets over here, which is crazy that they got the sun. Anyways,
that's why that's what they wrote. That was the Beatles song, "Here Comes the Sun." That was
"Here Comes the Sun."
That
was
what they wrote about.
I'm rising over here. I gotta stop the over here jokes. So I assume that where he was in his dream sequence was the Atlantic City boardwalk. I just assumed because I'm like, I only know of one boardwalk.
But the boardwalk is all in Jersey. But they were, I'm pretty sure they were at Asbury because of that building. I was like, hold on one second. You know, there's the first dream, the second dream. The first dream is where he douses.
Yeah.
Douses himself. And, you know, they're all talking about racism, about, like, you know, whether it was the Indian food or Vesuvio's did it to them. And I remember being like, I think that's Asbury, because Asbury's got a thing. And then the second time, we'll talk about it later, but when he's inside and sees Paulie him having dinner.
Right.
According to Wikipedia, filming locations, Verona, Jersey City, Belleville Turnpike, Long Island City, Asbury Park, Asbury Park Convention Hall.
Called it straight up. Yeah. I have no idea.
I know that fucking building.
I just assumed, I was like, hey, I've seen Boardwalk Empire. That takes place in Atlantic City. What am I supposed to know about? But yeah, so before we get, I think, into the long dream sequence, let's start off with what was going on earlier in the episode. So it starts off with Livia sitting down with Tony and Barbara. Barbara is Tony Soprano's sister, who you don't really see much of in the show.
So was this the same actress who played her earlier? They did switch actresses with her.
For Barbara?
Yes.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
At one point they did. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. And also, you know, that's some trivia that I'm sure someone does know and will write to us in our email and yell at us about.
So Danielle Delvecchio played Barbara earlier. Okay. I think I'm trying to figure out which one was the first one.
Yeah. Well, doesn't matter. Another one. I mean, it matters. But
there's two. There's two different ones. But the thing is, they look so much alike that it's hard to tell.
Yeah. And it's an interesting scene because you've got Tony, you know, after his frank conversation with Livia in the previous episode, where they're just, you know, they finally talk after not talking for a whole season because, you know, she tried to kill him. You know, it's interesting because she is now, with Janice gone, her housing situation is in flux because she can't stay at the house because she needs someone to be there to help her. She can't stay with Tony for sure. Barbara doesn't want her to stay with her. And because of this, and she won't go back to Green Grove. And because of this, I feel like Livia becomes the most Livia that you've seen her in a while. I kind of describe her as like the T-1000 when the T-1000 falls into the lava and then kind of turns into every character that he pretended to be as the T-1000 before he dies. It was like Livia like brought out every single manipulative weapon that she had to be like someone has to live with me, come on. And I have a clip of that. It's called Livia Melts Down.
It's an eggplant. Now you won't even accept food from your own mother. You believe that uncle of yours. You never conspired with him.
I wish somebody would tell me what you're talking about.
Ask your brother.
I got nothing to say to you.
Janice was right. I won't go back to that place.
You got that right.
Tony.
She was abusive to the staff. Don't listen to the manipulation.
Taking a pay from your wife's mortgage.
Oh, that is fucking outrageous. There are two tickets. Take Aunt Quinn with you. That'll fuck a miserable.
My sister Quintina will fly.
Have to revoke your like double sound clip editing privileges because, you know, sometimes we just want to hear the clip. I don't know.
Sometimes you do, but all right, I'll tell you right now. sure, on audio, none of that will make sense. But when I eventually come out with the video version of that, it's going to be shot, reverse shot. Every time Livia talks, it's going to be the T-1000 screaming and melting in the lava. And then every time they talk, it'll just be a clip from that. It'll be a great video, and we'll use it for promotion, and you'll love it. But the point being that she basically melts down. I mean, she's using every manipulative trick in the book. She even goes so far as to say that, like, you're taking a page from your wife's book, implying that Carmela, you know, has ever been, you know, anything but sweet to her, anything but, like, mm-hmm. like inviting her. She's been invited to live at Tony's house multiple times. So, yeah, mm-hmm. it is kind of like an interesting moment watching that. And, of course, Tony then makes the foolish mistake of giving her two plane tickets so that she can go fly to Phoenix.
So bad.
And, you know.
Tucson,
that's right. and yeah, like, you know, basically saying, get the fuck out of here. You know, go visit someone. Someone I'm sure can stand you. And then, of course, those tickets are stolen. And that's not going to end well for her.
I think this wasn't a lot of comedy in this episode, but I think that scene was the funniest, because I laughed both at Tony. She was abusive to the staff. And then Barbara going, "Oh, good going, Ma."
Yeah. I thought that was an interesting moment that Barbara was able to. Like, I don't think, I think I'm so affected by Livia Soprano's ability to manipulate that, like, I would never dream of being like, good going, because I'd be like, what are you doing? She's fragile. But she's not really fragile, you know?
She's one of the most master manipulators has ever been, like,
yeah, it's, she, out there, really. She manipulates me, and she's not even my mom. Like, I feel bad for her. She's not. She doesn't even exist. She's like a character on a TV show.
Character.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing is, too, is like, I don't know. So, like, if you've ever had, like, fucked up parents, that sounds really bad to say, but, like, or, like, any step parents or whatever that were just, like, really messed up. I've had a few.
Uh-huh.
And, like, they get to you. Like, that just, like, she always emoted just getting to you. Like,
yeah.
Oh, you know what? I'm going to get you where it really fucking hurts.
Yeah. She knows all your spots. Yeah.
Yep.
She knows. Absolutely. She knows all of your vulnerabilities.
And I love that you called her the T-1000 melting down, because that is something that old Italian ladies, like, they remember your catalog of guilt trips, but they lose the sense of context. So she has, like, this series of things that she can guilt Tony over, but she's forgotten, like, what they're talking about at that particular moment.
Right.
It's they have the long-term memory, but not the short-term one.
Yeah, she has the arsenal, but she doesn't really remember what order to trigger the bombs. So she's just kind of...
Arsenal, no strategy.
Yeah, she's going scattershot. She's just like, your wife was mean to me once, and my sister doesn't fly. And it's like... it's all of a mullet.
You used too many onions in the sauce, and your uncle... Yeah,
exactly. You stole $5 from my wallet. Yeah. It is just like
your father never took me anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. Now you won't eat my cooking. She really is, you know, she really is pulling out the big guns in that scene. And any Livia Soprano scene in this entire series, you really have to treasure because of course the actress who played her did end up passing away before they were probably able to finish.
Right. So in terms of actors, because there's actors who die after their worst role, like, you know, the famous example being like Raul Julia, dying Street after Fighter. Shooting Street Fighter. But then,
it's a bummer.
On the other side,
he's actually my friend's dad.
Really?
Yeah.
Raul Julia?
That's my friend. My friend Ben Ami Julia is from high school. Yeah.
Great actor.
That's so sad. Yeah. I mean, real quick, he did deliver the best game over I've ever heard an actor deliver. He did the best he could by playing M. Bison. So
Then on the flip side, Nancy Marchand playing Livia, that was probably the peak of her career. Maybe not. I mean, it's pretty. There might have been another peak like in the 40s that I am not aware of, but she went out on top in my mind.
Sure.
The guy who played the slave master in Gladiator, who like died right before they finished Gladiator.
I don't remember that.
Oh, really?
Character.
I don't remember that either. No.
He's like the one who tells him to win the crowd. It was a really good role.
But I didn't remember he died.
Yeah.
That actor, I don't even remember the actor, but yeah, it's rare that you die with a really good role. It is most of the time you're playing M. Bison or something. But yeah, I mean, Nancy Marchand definitely went out playing probably one of the greatest TV characters in TV history, if not the greatest character in television history. And it's almost like it is almost insulting that you have to call it television history, because television history is so limited, because you know this is one of the first like prestige TV shows, right? So it's unfair, just in acting history, one of the best characters in fiction. That's what I think I would call it. So that was that scene. Then we of course get into this calling card scam that is kind of
can you explain? I mean, I know I appreciated that they explained the entire scam, which is rare.
I appreciated they explained the scam and that the explanation served a purpose. But for those of you who want it explained, so basically what happens is you have a prepaid calling card that you pay for. You pay for a bunch of the minutes on credit. And then you sell them to, they said, mostly immigrants.
You have a line of credit that's not yours, right? Like they
I think it was.
Yeah, it's not yours.
Yeah, I think it was a part of the credit line from the Scatino bust out, but I'm not sure. I don't think they may have specified, but it doesn't matter. You buy them on credit, and of course you don't pay it. You don't pay it back. Meanwhile, you just sell all of these prepaid cards, and eventually the minutes get cut off, but you've already collected the money from... You're basically scamming immigrants out of calling their family, which is peak mafia...
Tale old time. Yeah. Tale as old as time.
Yeah, tale as old... exactly. Tale as old as time. So,
well, you know, they say that the history of settlement, of human settlement, was basically... that like instead of being a bandit where you had to like prey on people like passing through your area, like if you started a settlement you would have like a certain amount of people that you could just prey on all the time, and that's kind of how like cities developed. It was a better way to
So that was part of the economy of like you're talking about settlement as in like settler
cities.
Colonialism?
No, in terms of like why we switched from hunter gatherers to like cultivators.
Oh, I thought you were just talking about how settlers, you know, colonialists just come in and they're like, "Okay, good. I've got a good pool of people to scam."
Applicable as well.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely.
Interchangeable.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, it's so Big Pussy actually explains the entire scam to Furio, and in that scene where he's like meticulously explaining how the scam works, Tony looks at him, and that's the moment you realize that Tony realizes, oh, he's wearing a wire. He's like, no one in the mafia is like meticulously explaining how crimes work.
Right.
You know?
Right. Tony always wears his heart on his sleeve to a certain extent.
Yes.
So whether it's like the little, like the tint of the eye or whatever, he's like, he knows what's up.
Tell what he's thinking based on how his nose is whistling at that particular moment.
Yeah, right. His wheezes say a lot about how he's feeling in the moment. But yeah, he is definitely, you know, using his eyes a lot in that scene, and it's, it becomes clear immediately, like, shit, he's on to him. And who's to say that he wasn't on to him before that? I mean, I think they imply that he was on to him before that.
Well, you'd think he would have been on to him after like the suspicious car accident that he had while trying to follow Christopher while he was being a pretend cop.
Yeah. Right. Pussy was like very obvious with the entire thing. There were multiple times in this season where Big Pussy would come up to Tony and be like, "Hey, remember that crime we pulled? Do we have any money from that crime?" And Tony, yeah. Tony would ignore him, or like change the subject really fast. Like he was able to kind of like put him in a box. And I think
because he has a soft spot.
Yeah.
He has a soft spot for people that he really loves.
Yeah, I think he didn't want to believe that he was actually doing this, mm-hmm. but at the same time he was protecting himself from it. So right. you see that he in some way, if not subconsciously, if not consciously, knows that Big Pussy is a snitch.
I mean, and he didn't even want to talk to Patsy about the coat inside the restaurant. He's like, "Oh no, we don't talk about that."
Yeah,
here.
Yeah.
So, by the way,
yep.
Sorry to switch topics a little bit. Did you know who the hell Patsy? Did you know that Patsy and Philly,
his twin brother Philly? Yeah,
Philly Spoons. Did they ever explain that they're twins? I don't remember that explanation.
Yeah. They did.
Okay, I don't remember that either.
Yeah, it's from the first season. It's like very early in the first season. Philly gets shot in a car, and then Patsy, who is his twin brother, but the difference is Patsy wears glasses.
There's a cop who looks almost exactly like them too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like it's a character. And then you guys don't remember, like, at one point Patsy shows up in the backyard, in Tony's backyard, and pisses in his pool, and he has like a gun and he's drunk. You guys, it's like,
no.
It's from the first season. That's a thing. But,
sure. So, by the way, the one of the sticking points between Tony and Richie Aprile is the fucking jacket.
And
then now the way that Tony and Carmella reconcile
is
that he gets her this coat. Like, there's a lot of coat-based drama in this show.
Yeah, there's also, a good piece
very
of...
Very Italian.
You're from the East Coast. I feel like the... coats must be a big part of East Coast.
Yeah, it's got to be a part of the culture. Yeah. It's cold as shit.
Yeah, I mean you gotta have your fur coats.
So yeah,
I never could afford any of that. But there was like always a thing of like, oh, look at that, like, you know, we'd walk down the street, look at that lady with a fur coat. Is it mink?
Yeah,
is it fox?
I think that like fur or just like a nice warm piece of clothing is. Since it's necessary, if you have a fancy piece of warm clothing, it's like it serves the purpose of an apology, of a gift. It's it's an all-purpose gift. That's the way I would look at it. The mink coat is interesting because, like, you've got a little bit of this hangover from the previous episode in which Carmella is, like, pissed at Tony. Because of the Russian being, making his way back into her life and just kind of, like, she feels like...
The last episode ended with her figuring out at long last how to manipulate him and not be his prisoner.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's just like, me and Ro, we're going to go to Rome soon, and there's nothing you can fucking do about it. And you're still on a hangover from that episode, so when Tony presents the mink coat to her, you know, you can tell he plays this little trick where he's like, it's alive, and then like pulls it out. And there's this, she immediately goes from like, leave me alone, Tony, I'm doing work. And also, I kind of fucking hate you, you cheating asshole, to, oh my God, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
It was very Staten Island. It was very Staten Island. Very, very the culture.
Yeah.
Very the culture.
and you know, there was part of me that was just like, it's a nice apology. It's a beautiful, I mean, think about how many little mink creatures had to die to make it.
You'd think she should be nice. Too smart to be manipulated by consumer goods that Tony can easily grab off of the back of the truck and give her at any time. But then again, you know, why would she be with this guy if not for the amount of stock that she puts in those kinds of
That's true.
Gifts?
And they got Meadows' graduation coming
up.
All the things that, like, you know, the outside religious things that happen, you know, like,
right.
That's a cornerstone, right?
Yeah.
Meadows in the episode is like,
yeah,
such a good, such a good B storyline.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I do think that she also, like, Tony also did another smart thing in giving her the coat, but then also using it as a way to have a sexy time. Where he's like, not yet. And like,
is that what it's called?
It's called the sexy time.
It's called the sexy time.
Yeah, yeah. Here we call it the sexy time. here we never got over Borat and still think it's the funniest. very nice. So yeah, like I think that helped make her feel sexy, because that is like one of the things about like Tony's like constant infidelity, is that not only is it embarrassing, but it also makes her feel like less than, like she's getting older. Yeah. So like it was a smart move on Tony's part, getting her the mink coat and whatnot. Of course, they have sex, or as I call it, sexy time. And then Tony has his first dream sequence.
Yeah. So, by the way, one of the parts that annoyed me about this episode, which for the most part, I think it's a pretty good episode.
Sure.
But it was very much like Matt Lieb was editing this episode, because I feel like it was called Funhouse because it was like sound editor fun time.
Yes.
Just throw anything at the fucking wall episode. Uh-huh. So first there is the montage, like, transition where they go from the Indian restaurant to Vesuvio.
Yes.
The sound switch over there is super jarring, and I have a little clip from that. I don't know if you remember the like musical
vaguely,
switch.
Vaguely.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know that way to take away. We deliver to.
So just, and this song, I had to Shazam it. It's like it's random Rolling Stones song that Keith Richards sings. It's
Who sings it?
It's the song that the Rolling Stones play while Mick Jagger is doing like a costume change.
Really?
Yeah. It's like
that's crazy.
It's like their concert and I don't get it. They brought it back in the end of the episode too. Very odd song choice. It is
an odd Rolling Stones song. I was thinking to myself, like, that does not sound anything like Mick Jagger. I know he's gotten older, but yeah, that is strange.
Doesn't sound like him.
And I that's not to say I didn't think the voice is very good. And to be honest, I'm surprised that's Keith Richards, because it makes me feel like Keith Richards, should have had a solo career.
Well, it's like you can kind of tell it's not Mick also, because the lyrics just sound like weird drunk guy random, like the drunk guy random phrase generator.
Yeah,
wrote that. Find me in yellow page. First of all, find me in yellow page. Like, he's not
yellow
even.
Pages?
Yeah.
He doesn't even say yellow pages.
It's, yeah,
find,
yeah,
me in the yellow page.
Yeah, and first of all, you'd find him. It would be the white pages. The yellow pages are for businesses.
Yeah.
Like, get it straight, Rolling Stones.
Right.
I understand Rolling Stone gathering no moss, but also gathering no information neither. Hey, all right, kill me. So, yeah.
And then,
summertime and the living is thirsty. At least it is in the Lieb household. And when we are trying to get hydrated, we reach for the best water on Earth, Fiji water.
Fiji water is bottled at the source and untouched by man until you unscrew the cap. Fiji water really is from the islands of Fiji, 1,600 miles from the nearest continent, and it is sourced from an ancient artesian aquifer and is naturally preserved from external elements.
That's right, Vince. You can literally taste the difference. So whenever we do an ad, we sometimes get samples sent to us of whatever we're advertising. And when I first got sent Fiji water bottles in the mail, I thought it was hilarious. I was like, I've tasted water before. Why would they do this? But believe me when I say, this is absolutely the best water I've ever tasted. And that's because Fiji water is a natural artesian water with 100% natural electrolytes. Unlike some other top premium bottled water brands, Fiji Water's electrolytes are 100% naturally occurring.
That's right, Matt. Fiji Water has more than double the electrolytes as the other two top premium bottled water brands, giving it its signature smooth, soft taste. Fiji Water is the number one premium imported bottled water brand in the U.S., and it has a perfectly balanced 7.7 pH.
Also, Fiji Water's 330 milliliter and 500 milliliter bottles are made from using 100% recycled plastic. Fiji Water continues to lead the top premium bottled water competition on launching 100% recycled plastic bottles. The aquifer Fiji Water originates from is a sustainable source and will continue to replenish as the rain and water cycle persists in the islands of Fiji.
So get stocked up on Fiji Water this summer and visit your local retailer to pick some up today for your next backyard party, beach or pool day, hike, or even your home office. It's not just water.
It's Fiji Water.
Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 2 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get juicy red, white, or black seedless grapes for $1.49 a pound with your card and a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The and point then, of that song was just waiting on a call from you, was that right. line.
So then it switches into the dream sequence, and it starts off with the ever-present, like, wood creaking sound effects.
Yes.
I guess we can justify that because they're on a boardwalk, which they don't creak, I don't think, right? No.
Sure.
If it was a really shattery old boardwalk.
Yeah, right, exactly. You know?
Yeah, it's possible. I guess you could say that it's supposed to be like the boat that they eventually go on where they're feeding.
So I have a theory on this. So you're right. Everything starts out with a creaking. But I don't know if you noticed this because I'm very into art. Audio. Obviously, audio art is my specialty. I'm very smart with audio art. That's a book that I'm writing. I'm very smart with audio art. Anyways, the creaking wood sound eventually it transforms into farts.
It transforms into farts, and it transforms into whatever the fuck is going on in the background of Tony's dream about Melfi, which that was the other audio clip that I have. And you can try and tell me whatever the fuck is going on in the background here, but I have a little of that.
Go ahead.
I push you on the brain. Ooh. I always do. Well, I want to fuck you. I always did. Dude, I told you that the first time we met.
I find you immensely attractive, Anthony.
Thought I repulsed you.
You go out of your way to repulse me.
But you like that. You just admitted you find me attractive. You're the one that's fucked up.
Anthony.
They're farts.
What are we going to do with you?
There was like, I thought there were cat sounds at first, and then they kind of sound like horn, like saxophone squeaks. I don't even know what they're going for there.
I think what they're supposed to be specifically, I think, is less important than the fact that the sound editing in a dream sequence is just a signifier that you're having a dream sequence.
Okay. Oh, that means dream sequence.
That's what it just means, dream sequence. But I thought all they've done
reason
this before.
Reason for I put sound effect here.
They also did like the thing that I thought was really funny about all the like the dream sequences is that like they were like trying to, I mean it did get progressively like, you know, like it's a dream sequence, like yes. really mm-hmm. obvious, but they were also trying to not be obvious, and I just remember being like Tony would never walk up in a, sorry, I'm going to say this, guinea tee, up in like, you know, like, just to play a guinea tee.
Yeah.
No, but, like, in the therapist's office. And then also when he had that big ass erection.
Yeah.
I was just like, okay. But it's just really funny how they decided to place, like, the, this is, we're going to tell you dream. But it also had some magical realism.
Yeah.
In some of these, like, you know, they tried to do, it was interesting because, like, some of it was like,
yeah.
What are you doing? And somebody was like, okay, magical realism.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that I've seen other dream sequences. In previous dream sequences, they have the audio signifiers of the weird kind of like crackling and whatever going on. But in this one, the fact that it was tummy rumbles and farts, I thought was brilliant and hilarious. Like this was a fart heavy episode, which is a bold choice for the one where you're going to kill off a main character. Like it made me love the episode. The fact that they were willing to like, okay, we're going to do these really surreal, abstract dream sequences, magical realism, and a little farty fart, little toots happening, little tooty noises.
I think it was a little bit of like his body was rejecting that he had to do this, right?
Yeah,
like, I think
yes.
That there was like, there is that like on one level, I mean, the funny, but also like, you know,
yeah,
thing. And I love that Meadow kind of said it when, you know, she was like, that's racist. You can't say it. Like, yeah. I was like, boom, because, you know, the Serranos had that, those moments.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, for the time, you would just be like, oh, shit, this one's on point.
Yeah.
And, like, it was up, his body was rejecting the fact
yes.
that he had to kill one of his best friends.
Yeah, yeah,
and,
yeah.
And, like, that was, it was, like, it was a deeper, like, when you go into the subconscious, when you go to, like, the fact that, like, this is a show about mental health.
Yes.
And nobody, like, even to this day, people are like, oh, Sopranos, great show. Like,
oh, yeah.
Dramatic. Like, I think we've lost the, like, the mental health. Like, that was actually the thing. That
yeah.
So many people watch it in the beginning. That's why I watched it.
Yes.
Because
I was five. That's another story. But, like, yeah, that gist.
I also think that is, like, David Chase co-wrote this episode himself, I think. And I think that is very much like a David Chase writing tick, is where his like subconscious thinks of a racist thing, and then he uses the story to like call himself out on his own racist thought. Where it's like,
yeah.
he very much had the thought that, oh yeah, he went to get Indian food, and what happens when you get Indian food? Oh, you get food poisoning because you know those dirty Indians, they'll just put anything in your food.
Right.
But then he half calls him out on it, half calls himself out on it by having like Meadow and Dr. Melfi point it out.
Yep.
Which
yes,
I guess like. Like, I guess sort of makes it okay, but I don't know. He did
yeah,
that. He's done that in the past on this show too.
It's definitely a show where the first draft, David Chase just writes as an Italian who's kind of racist. And then
yeah.
the second draft, he's like, fuck, I need Meadow and Melfi to bail me out from this so I can be,
yeah,
so I can be aware.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think he just created Meadow's character.
Yeah.
To check himself.
Yeah, definitely.
There's a lot of times I'm like, she's there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's either that or he, in his mind, Meadow is annoying. Like, now I need an annoying liberal.
Two extremes. Yeah. Two extremes, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
This motherfucking yeah. liberal. Or
she's or
you're
yeah,
gonna
exactly.
You're going to play annoying broad who gave me script notes in this episode. I mean, Meadow.
I do think, you know, credit where credit is due. When Tony wakes up from his first dream sequence, obviously he wakes up and immediately vomits and says a bunch of racist shit about Indian food and Indians in general. And actually, I have a clip from that. Why don't we play that?
Which one's that?
It's called Tony Gets Sick.
What? I could just fucking kill myself. I've been so fucking depressed.
No, what now?
So big nothing.
What is?
Life.
Only that is your mother talking.
Everything's black.
Oh, you have a tendency towards depression, yes.
Well, it's coming from here. It's not my fucking head. It's my stomach. I'm nauseous.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, fuck!
Oh, fuck. It's the chicken vindaloo. Fucking
motherfucking
lugs.
Oh, my God. You're father is sick.
You're mad at fart sound.
Daddy, what happened? I went to an Indian restaurant. That is so racist.
Who's letting those big ones?
There better be Coke left in that fridge, is all I can say.
It's just, it's a wonderful sequence because
those goddamn Indians with their food that gives you food poisoning. We need to cure this with some sugar water.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I love the fart that comes right after she says it's racist.
It's racist.
Like, I think that was David Chase again.
Yeah.
He's like,
Yeah.
Like, nah.
Yeah, David Chase being like, do a big fart right after. It'll be great. It'll be a fart that says go fuck yourself. But yeah, I mean, the sequence is great in and of itself. There's just multiple moments. Number one, it starts out with, like, he wakes up and he's depressed and he's like, life's a big nothing, you know, everything is bad. And then all of a sudden he's like, wait, no, the call is coming from inside the house, where he just realizes it's not my head, it's my stomach. And then, which is kind of a weird moment, because it's like, I've never had depression in my stomach before.
It's but, like the story of America, where we start to get introspective and then we're like, no, wait, it is the immigrants who are wrong.
That's right. And then he's just like, immediately goes from like that inward rage of depression to the outward rage of racism. And then he blames Indian food. Karm blames Indian food. Meadow calls it racist. And then she's like, I hope there better be some Coke left after AJ goes, who's letting out those big ones? The look on AJ's face when she says there better be some Coke left, because there's a look on his face of like, I might have drank all the Coke, but I don't remember. It's very cute. But what I was going to say was
Eeyore look.
Credit where credit is due. Eventually, Tony does come around to going like, all right, let's be rational about this. It may not have been the Indian food. It may have been Vesuvio, where I had muscles. And this is, I think, outside of like, because this is a rewatch, obviously, if this is your first time watching it, your favorite scene is probably, one of the dream sequence scenes, or maybe when Tony and his crew whack Big Pussy. But for me, rewatching, my favorite scene is when Artie comes over and they do a little like Law and Order detective scene where they're trying to figure out whether or not the food poisoning came from the Indian food or from Vesuvio. And Vince, I have a little clip of that.
I can tell how much sound editing you did to this clip by how excited you are for me to play it. And I haven't listened to this one yet, but I'm going to go ahead and guess you did some editing work on this one. But sure.
Very excited.
I think that's a fair guess. So this is Law and Order.
In the Sopranos.
The people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups.
Artie Bucco.
To investigate
food poisoning. And Tony Soprano.
To prosecute
the ones doing the food poisoning.
These are their stories.
Tony had food poisoning all night. The poor guy.
Ooh. Oh, hey. It's not from my place.
Was he at Vesuvio last night?
Yeah, but I got an A rating. It's...
Is that Artie?
Hey, Tom.
Send him up.
Tony, go to sleep.
Send him up.
Jeez, you picked up a bad one somewhere, huh?
Somewhere.
It's a serious allegation.
Nobody's gonna fucking sue you. You see, this is what I'm talking about.
Tony, you ate mussels?
Prince Edward Island. Top of the line.
After an entire Indian dinner?
You ate at an Indian restaurant? There you go.
Oh, it was the mussels. They came up undigested.
They came up undigested. How could it be the cause?
It's where my body shut down. It... Self-protection.
Did you call pussy? He had the muscles, too.
Sal, it's Arthur Bucco.
Hello.
Hey, man. Listen, I'm at the Sopranos' house, and Tony's a little green around the gills. I mean, flu, I'm guessing, but maybe he ate something, didn't agree with him. It would help if we knew. Did you have any symptoms?
No. Well, once during the night, I did have a slight touch of diarrhea.
Touch of diarrhea.
You motherfucker.
A touch! Nothing, right, puss? Not like what Tony's going through, right? Like from bad shellfish or anything.
What the fuck? Am I gonna get sick now?
No!
Listen.
guys eat the same thing at the Indian restaurant?
Well, we both had the papadums, but different courses.
Both had the papadums, different entrees.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Tony, but I feel vindicated.
Oh, what, you gotta go again?
Please let me die.
No! Come on. I'll let you.
You really outdid yourself on that one.
Oh, that is.
I was a little bit upset that there wasn't the doo 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 doo.
Yeah, I thought in my original version, I played the entire theme song, and I was like, you know what? I think people can only take about 2 minutes of my clips. Yeah. As soon as I go overboard, like over 2 minutes, they just start losing it. And
we needed iced tea in there to be like, it's called food poisoning.
It's called the down low.
We need to like Marissa the Heart again to say like which one.
Yeah, I didn't think about adding it. I only had so much time. Anyways, it was a wonderful scene in which they're trying to figure it out, and of course, it's still questionable at the end because you know at some point their neighbor Dr. Cusimano comes over and says that somehow Indian food is impervious to food poisoning because of the spices they use, which
that
is
they
something...
use the spices to eliminate the microbiomes.
Which I didn't know that there
sounded
could be...
plausible.
Yeah, I didn't know that there could
I was
be.
Like, all right, cool.
If there are spices that get rid of food poisoning, if that means Indian food is impervious, I will always eat Indian food. It is my favorite cuisine.
It kind of sounded like midichlorians thing. Like, yeah. On Star Wars. Like, yeah, that's what I heard. Like, I was like, oh, the midichlorians.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Yeah.
I was like, wait, what?
That's what I hear anytime a doctor talks. Anytime a doctor, I'm like, oh, yeah. Like Dr. Fauci talks about, like, you know, the different receptors on a coronavirus. I'm like, yeah, definitely. They got, like, the little hooky things. Yeah, totally. Midichlorians. So then after this, we go back into a dream sequence. So the first one is Tony tries to light himself on fire because he has cancer. And we could go into like looking at a dream book and being like, what does it mean? But why?
Yeah, who cares?
That's what other podcasts do.
There's enough Freudian bullshit in this show that I already don't care about.
Also, there's like 7 dream sequences.
Yeah, they're nonstop. It's a whole bunch. But
I think the best way to watch a dream sequence is, oh, look, he's a fish. Oh, yeah. They drove away in an Italian car. Oh,
yeah.
Was that an Italian car? Or
yeah, it was
a cloud car. Because that's very.
They're the same thing. All.
Well, Italians invented clowns. So
yeah, Italians are all clowns.
Sometimes they're funny, and sometimes they are sad.
Sometimes they are sad. A clown.
We do art.
But the doctor, I
we
am
do
the
a
great
bigger
clown.
Art. Sometimes the clown, he is sad.
But yeah, the most memorable one and the one that obviously everyone talks about in this episode in terms of dream sequences is the big pussy is a fish. Which is funny watching it again because they really lay into the swimming with the fishes metaphor in the
sleep with the fishes.
Yeah, the sleeping. Oh yeah, the sleep with the fishes metaphor.
Sleep with the fishes.
Yeah. they mention it multiple times. He's just like, hey, I'm a fish. Hey, remember from Godfather 1, a fish, it means you're sleeping with the fishes. It's a Sicilian. It was like very much like, yeah, we get it. But yeah. It is still a good scene. I think the scene that stands out more is later, in later seasons, eventually, Tony is going to get a Big Mouth Billy Bass for Christmas, and it's going to remind him of the dream.
And there was a big shot of a fish in the Indian restaurant. The opening tracking shot was
the
following
track.
Yeah.
And you, yes, exactly.
Yeah, and it's like...
And it's always a sea bass. It's like a sea bass.
Yeah. I mean, a bass is the best fish to hang, you know? But
I think this episode gave David Chase an unfair amount of leeway with dream sequences, like, because I think they did them well in this episode because they played the dream sequences mostly like for silliness and laughs, but then that gave him license to, you know, go into big dream drama in future.
Sure, but I
seasons.
Do think, again, the fact that the backing track was mostly farts, I thought was not only not only relevant to the storyline, but also funny. So I was impressed.
They played them for laughs. That's the way dreams should be played.
Yeah.
Right.
They were very good. And so then obviously we get to the big pussy getting whacked scene. And, you know, what? Nothing new to be said about it other than, like, it is kind of in rewatching it. You definitely feel for Big Pussy because of the fact that, you know, he gets caught and these guys, they basically say, you know, you were a brother to all of us and you betrayed us, and you feel kind of sad about it. But at the same time, you know, it is kind of, having seen this series multiple times, you're kind of like, I'm glad you're done with it. It's like rewatching Sopranos is basically remembering all your favorite parts from when you watched it the first time and not enjoying them as much as you're watching, like, the new shit that you didn't catch the first time.
Or enjoying the stuff that, like, you didn't, like when I rewatch, I mean, I've also rewatched it multiple times. Rewatch it, but, like, you know, and rewatching it is like, so one, Silvio is one of my favorite characters.
Yes.
It's also like, I love Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band. And Steve
Like, of course.
You know, Steve Van Zandt.
Yeah.
But, like, one of the things that's really funny is, like, I didn't realize Silvio's little things in the episode.
Yeah.
Like, his whole, like, the fucking noise. When he goes and, like, he's like, he can't stand.
He's
uncomfortable on a boat. And I remember, like, rewatching it and be like,
yeah.
Comfortable.
Yeah.
Silvio, Paulie's just like, Paulie is like a Barbie doll, a Ken doll sometimes.
Yeah.
His expression doesn't change a lot of the
time. Yeah. He's got and creepy dead eyes.
And Silvio was like, freaking noise. And it's like, and then Tony tries to stop him, and like, I never really realized that the first time. Like, I didn't realize that thing, but then when I replayed it, because I knew, you know, what was going to happen to Sal Big Pussy, I was like, oh, Silvio's going through his own
totally
in that. And he's like I gotta get out of this shit, I don't like downstairs. And it's like, okay,
and
what's going on there?
And I love that he straight up, you know, Tony's like, basically, like, I had food poisoning and you don't see me leaving. And he just goes, don't yell at me.
Which is, exactly. They're a little thing.
It's like, very cute.
Because
it's,
of their relationship.
Yeah.
Throughout the series. Like, it's an intimate moment.
It is.
Is taken away when you were first watching it. Because what you're thinking about is, okay, Big Pussy.
Yeah, all you're thinking about is like, go back. Is he going to die? What's going to happen? But then, it is definitely, it gives a lot more depth to the Silvio character, you know, as someone who's not totally heartless, you know. And it's not that Paulie and Tony are heartless, but they're like, I mean, they're a little bit more heartless.
Paulie is by far the least introspective character, which I think is his role.
Right. Oh.
Yeah.
There's no introspection.
No. The dude lives his life just like on the surface of everything. The dude
He's
is
like
never...
the track suit king. He's also the track suit king.
Oh, yeah.
Just to be clear.
Yeah.
Paulie's got like
good.
The Donald Trump, Arnold Schwarzenegger thing where they're basically like, they live like a shark. Like, you can't catch them being hypocritical because, like, they don't care the past, like, does not really exist for them, which is weirdly, like on the one hand, it's like a sociopathic way to live. But on the other, those people are easier to hang out with in some ways because they're not hung up on shit. They're just just moving forward, and you don't have to deal with their shit a lot of the time.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because, like, Tony I think it was in a dream. Yeah, it was in a dream sequence where he's doing therapy. And he is mentioning all the reasons he hates Paulie, and one of the reasons that he's always whistling commercial jingles.
And it
reminded me of the, you know, the episode where he talks about the happy wanderer and why he hates the happy wanderer, someone who's like carefree without a care in the world, whistling down the street, has no worries. And you realize that, like, there's a little bit, that's where some of the resentment of Paulie comes from with Tony, is the fact that he is so surface level and non-introspective, and he's jealous of the fact that, like, the dude can, like, just, he only cares about making sure his hair looks good.
Yeah, he would never have a panic attack because he lacks that level of...
Right, thinking. He doesn't, yeah, yeah, exactly.
He's like,
You need to have.
You can't reach me there.
Yeah, yeah. You need to have fear of impending death in order to have panic, and that's just not something. Like, yeah.
Pauly don't give a fuck.
Pauly only cares about ghosts.
Don't give a f.
Yeah, right. Pauly cares about ghosts and cats. And yeah, like,
he cares about ghosts if they're gonna like ruin his boner, but he doesn't care about like, it's not like a past. It's not like something that he. It's not about a regret at all for him.
Exactly.
Ruin my shit right here. You gonna ruin my shit?
Yeah,
right
exactly.
Here. Yeah, that's Pauly.
This ghost gave me ED.
yeah. during Big Pussy's death sequence, like, I kept playing Mark Wahlberg in my mind, where I was like, you know. If I would have been there, it wouldn't have gone down like that. Because
I'm
thinking about Big Pussy. Like, he's working with the feds. Like, he could. He's got one fat guy with food poisoning. You know, like Pauly, and then like Sylvia, who's checked out half of the time. Like, there's many opportunities where he could, you know, maybe go for the gun and try and shoot his way out of there, and he would get away with it. It's not like he's. Like, he is working with the Fed, so he could be like, yeah, they found out I was a federal agent. They tried to whack me. I had to shoot my way out of there. Like, he could get away with it easily.
At the same time, I was also thinking he also admits to it, which is something that, like, you know, obviously when Tony went over to his house and, like, searched the stuff, he found, like, the wire. But... you know, Big Pussy doesn't know that. So I was, you know, part of me was going, if it were me, you know, I would just be like, deny it to the end, right? I mean, it seems like you use manipulation skills, mostly because I'm not a fighter. I'm a coward. So
there was also that pregnant pause.
Yeah.
Between Pauly and Sal.
Yeah.
Like Big Pussy. Like, there was that pregnant pause, like that pregnant stare.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
It was
yeah.
Just like, I like never realized that until I just rewatched it. Like the stare.
You mean the stare right before he realizes what's going on, or the one right before he gets shot? Because there's a moment they all have their guns out, and there's this like pause, and they're all looking at each other, and he just goes, "What?"
No, it's before that.
Yeah,
Like, just the two, because I think it's Silvio goes upstairs.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
To be like, I can't stand boats.
Yes.
And I got the thing. You know, I'm getting sick. And they just have a pregnant pause in between. And that's another moment where you could have, you know, like the shoot your way out.
Yeah, yeah.
You could have, like, Silvio's up doing his probably vomiting or getting fresh air.
Sure.
Tony doesn't look stable. You're staring Pauly in the face. He's not, you know, his gun is on his hands. He could have been like, boom, boom, bam.
Yeah.
It still would have been the odds of having somebody upstairs as an X-Factor, but... there were plenty of things, but I also think, I mean, as soon as Pussy starts drinking the tequila and downing it like a, you know, like I did when I was 20, like, you know, like, you know, like three back-to-back shots, because I'm miserable. Or because a boy didn't like me or whatever. Like, that's what he's like, that's what he does. And so I think also, like, I think that's when he resigned.
Yeah, I think so too.
Like,
yeah.
That was the moment, as soon as he was like, I'm a pound this shit, he was like, I'm done.
Yeah, I think drink. He,
I mean, he was, it was pretty believable it. Because he did what like all dumb people do in like the police station, basically, when they're caught, which is that like you start admitting to little things and trying to spin it in a way that you think you're gonna get out of it, where you're like,
yeah,
oh yeah, I didn't kill him, but I was there that night. I mean, I didn't rob him. Okay, we robbed him, but it wasn't.
Yeah, we robbed
him,
but I told him not to do it.
Yeah, and so it's like he keeps admitting to smaller things, and then he eventually like accepts it, and he's like, all right, but can I just get drunk first?
And they actually have this great moment. And I have a clip from it where he is getting drunk from tequila. It's called the clip is called 12-13
Tequila.
Pussy gets blown out.
Acupuncturist out of Puerto Rico. 26. Tell you this broad, her ass was the second coming. Never wore panties. Brush her teeth with this shit. Every night she'd drink me under the fucking table. I'd eat her out when I was down there.
Hey, Push. She even really exist?
Fucked up. Not in the face, okay? Give me that. Huh? keep my eyes?
You were like a brother to me. To all of us.
Yeah. Started feeling out too. My inner balance is off.
What?
Jesus Christ. I gotta sit down. I feel like I can't stand. Is that okay, Tony? Did I sit?
Crap. They got him.
Yep.
I mean, it's a really fucking good death sequence. I mean, you know, it's really well done. I thought one interesting moment in it was he's talking about the Puerto Rican girl, you know, the one that he had claimed to go visit when he was actually hiding out from them.
Yep.
And he says the words, you know, would drink me under the table and then I would eat her out when I was down there. And they all laugh. Is Cunnilingus okay now? Like, what happened from, like, this season and last season? Like, last season, if you ate pussy, you were gay. It was just like they immediately were just like, nah, it's only gay people eat pussy. And, like, in this one, they're like, oh, that's funny. It just seemed like maybe the crew grew up a little bit.
Because they knew it was fake.
Yeah, it's because they knew it was
fake. They knew it was fake. Like, they knew the whole time.
Yeah.
And first of all, I don't think I've ever heard Puerto Rico mentioned in like, 2 minutes more than in this show. And so it's like, and it's like, it's New York, New Jersey. So, like,
yeah.
The whole thing. I'm like, all right, come on. Like, you've had to deal with Puerto Ricans. We used to freaking do the books for you. Yeah. Anyway, and so, like, their whole thing, like, I think they were just like, oh, it's fake, so we're just going to laugh it off.
Yeah.
And I also think a part of it was just, like, they were just like, let them, you know, like, there's a thing, I think, where I appreciate in The Sopranos and in both the whole arc of it, where I think where people who are close to them that they got to kill, you let them be for a second.
Yeah, you let them.
In whatever way that it is.
Yeah.
You let them be. So they're just like, all right, bro.
Yeah.
We're going to let you think this thing. We're gonna, okay, fine.
Yeah,
you know, like.
Yeah, and it's like.
Also, I think there's an aspect of it where, you know, Big Pussy's talking about a 26-year-old Puerto Rican girl where the last time they got grossed out by it was because they were thinking of old-ass Junior and his old-ass and his old-ass girlfriend who was, like, not even. It was, like, his main squeeze. Right. They're like, ah, you're going down on the girl you're, like, dating full-time, and you're, like, all old and stuff. Like, it was, like, a bunch of levels of things for them.
Not only was this guy eating pussy, but he was also in fucking love.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right.
I've never heard anything
more.
He's
also fucking old.
Yeah. That's too queer for me. Eating pussy while in love? Next you'll be holding hands while you're dying. Yeah, there's like there's a weird machismo thing that they decide to, I mean, they decide to just like put to the side when Tony is when Big Pussy's telling that story where they're just like gonna laugh with him and drink with him and then they shoot him, and it's kind of a touching scene. At one point, you know, he says, "I'm starting to feel it too." I'm not sure if he's talking about seasickness or if he's saying the food poisoning is hitting, but whatever it is.
Or the tequila.
Yeah, or the tequila. Yeah, not sure what he's starting to feel too, but I'm pretty sure that whatever he thought it was probably dread because he was about to get shot. And then he gets shot and he dies. And then there's 14 more goddamn minutes to this episode.
Yeah.
And I got
which is always crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it felt like in a lot of Sopranos episodes, you know, they usually don't resolve such a huge storyline in the middle of the episode, but there's 14 more minutes that I can kind of safely say are just the writers going, all right, we got to tie up a bunch of loose ends and just talk about it. So let's just go through this, and we'll have to add this storyline, and we have to take away this storyline. So just real quick, it's Livia gets caught. Tony gets arrested. Tony gets out. Melfi gets real with Tony. Meadow gets a degree. Chris gets his button, and David Scatino says goodbye. That's basically all of the things that happen. So Tony gets in trouble after Livia gets caught with the tickets. And then he gets bailed out. So, you know, he's arrested in front of Meadow, which sucks for Meadow right before her graduation. But Carm and Meadow have a conversation that's just like,
I like how she's pissed. Cool, she's like, before my graduation, and it's like you can't control when he's getting arrested.
Right? Yeah, right. Yeah,
she does both. She does before my graduation, and she goes, "He's my fucking father."
Yeah, yeah.
They fucking know. They don't fucking judge me.
Yeah,
don't talk about my friends. I was like, oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, it was nice to see that Meadow was kind of like it wouldn't take convincing for Meadow to understand that, like, this is a thing. Like, it was nice that she was able to put that to rest, where she wasn't going to be like, I wish my dad wasn't in the mafia. Like, at this point, she's like, right. She gets it. And she understands that this is a thing that's going to happen. So in terms of my least favorite scene, I would have to say it's the Melfi and Tony scene at the end. The only actual real Melfi and Tony scene, because the other Melfi and Tony scenes were all in dream sequences, but this one it was strange because it was just like Melfi kind of getting real with Tony about, like, Tony gets in there and he's like sad because of the fact that he's been arrested and he might actually, this is a big crime, he might go to prison because of this. It's mm-hmm. like part of a, if it's part of a RICO case, like RICO, it's a bad thing.
Yeah.
And then instead Melfi kind of goes like, but there's something deeper going on here. And I was annoyed with it because I was like, okay, we know that there is something deeper.
Because like the episode's already over by that point. You're like, all right.
Yeah, the episode's already over. And I'm kind of just like, oh God, I really don't want to get into this right now, Melfi. And right. I felt...
Well, it's David Chase thinking once again that the psychoanalysis is the most interesting part of the show.
Right.
You're like,
Yeah, I was like, I don't need more of this. And also it was, I'm not going to say it was a bad scene because of the fact that I felt like rather than being bad, it was a scene where I was just as annoyed with as Tony was with it, because Tony has also lost all patience for Melfi at this mm-hmm. point. He's mm-hmm. just like, I told you I might be getting arrested and you're trying to bring up other shit right now. Like, can't I just have a thing?
And their sexual tension is at the height.
Yeah, right, too. Exactly. Like, also, I'm hella horny and like you're pulling out all this sad stuff. And she just keeps calling him sad. And so I'm as annoyed as he is with Melfi in this scene. So in that way, it's kind of a good scene, but it is my least favorite. It was my most like, all right. I'll see you in season three.
Get on with
see
it.
You in season three. Bye, Melfi. See you in season three.
Yeah.
Lorraine Bracco was like, I demand another scene. Yeah,
exactly. And not to say that she's not wonderful and I enjoy Melfi scenes, but it's like, I was done with it at that point. And then, you know, you have Meadow's graduation and then you have
Also, they filled all the shots with like shots. Of, like, that was what I didn't. It was like, you guys could have just ended this. Or I think if it would have been filmed now, they would have, you know, because now people like HBO, all these networks, like they can get 45 minutes or an hour. But before it used to be like, you have to fill
the whole time. Yeah.
And
right.
like a bunch of it was just like,
yeah, right. Photos. Exactly. Photos. It was very.
Tony was evil. I was like, why is this still happening?
Yeah. It ends with a montage, musical montage, which is something the Sopranos do a lot in terms of like season enders. They love their musical montage endings where they're kind of like, remember earlier the Jewish guy? But do you also remember Davis Catino? But do you remember? It's like, yeah, we remember. I mean, I just was like,
remember.
Yeah. And it was, you know, again, that Rolling Stones song, waiting for a call from you. And I'm like, you know, not in love with that song. So it was an episode that ended about three quarters in. Still those,
like, they could have squeezed that into a shorter montage. I think
I agree.
Like, I get it. Like, you tried to wrap up all the things at the end of the season. Everybody's, you know, you show where everybody's at, like, oh, Meadow's graduating.
That shit was long.
Chrissy's getting his button, but they like devoted like 5 minutes to each one. And you're like, all right.
They just did some scattershot, you know, loose ends tying that I feel like is, you know, something that they stopped doing, I think, as the show improves, I mean, it just gets better and better. It's the best show. So earlier seasons, you do notice little things that they probably wouldn't have done. All in all, I love the episode and I love the season. I got to say, it's a great season.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
It's a good one. The arc of it all, the relationship with, like, I mean, it was interesting because, you know, it's the first time you see Junior in a while. Yeah. And he's like, get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
Carmela's going to kill you. And yeah. Season two is probably one of the, I mean, that was probably what got me really hooked.
Yeah.
When I originally watched it. Because it was like season one gets you on the concept, gets you on yeah. things. Mm-hmm. Season two, you're just like hit with everything. The
yeah.
family stuff. The like, you know, Melfi.
Yeah.
It puts the layers to it.
Yeah, for sure.
That like season one couldn't do because it's the first season and you've got yeah. to introduce characters.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it's a great season because you like, you know, but it was a interesting ending. And I even thought like I always, the thing that always bugged me was when, because I always remember like them rolling off Big Pussy off the boat.
Yeah.
But the whole time I was always like, that doesn't look like a big pussy in that bag. I was like, that was like a mannequin.
Yeah,
like,
big pussy is way bigger than that.
What bugged me is like, well, first of all, what are they going to do with that boat? Are they going to burn it? Because there's a bunch of evidence on that boat now. And secondly, like they went to Big Pussy's house to pick him up like while his wife was there. And then she shows up in the next scene and she's like, I don't know where he is. Where could Sal be? And it's like, they just said they were going to take your husband out on a boat. What do you think happened?
Right. Yeah, yeah. Like, literally, that's how Fredo was killed in Godfather. And there's no way you don't know what's happening there. But also, there's part of me that knows that Ange is like, number one, she's not going to say shit. And number two, she's low-key happy about it because, you know, her and Sal's relationship.
Oh, yeah, she wanted to get a divorce anyway.
She wanted to get a divorce anyways. But,
whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see. What else we got to talk about?
Oh, we're done. We're done, I think.
I think we're done, too.
We killed it. We crushed it.
I think we crushed this episode. And you know what? I'm going to say we crushed this season. But,
yeah.
You know, all in all, great season. Nalini, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me, and hopefully I can be back. I really want to, there's one
anytime.
Episode, I'll tell you later, that I really want to be back for, because that was my favorite.
Okay. Yeah, no, we would love to have you back. Yeah, we especially since most of our guests, I think, know nothing about the area in which Sopranos takes place. You're the first one who's been able to be like,
everything.
Is like, this is exactly where it was filmed. I mean, other than, you know, we've had like Alan Sepinwall, who like reviews everything, but he's more knows about it because he's a nerd. You know, you're actually cool as shit.
Wow.
Not nerdy like Alan fucking Sepinwall.
Right under the bus.
Oh, I remember. Nah. I remember, like, that's Asbury Park.
Yeah, that's yeah. Right. You wouldn't know that shit. Alan. No, I'm just kidding. Alan Sepinwall rules. Cool,
thank
cool.
Thank you all for having me. This is amazing.
Thanks so much for coming on. You know, email us at fraudcast@gmail.com. Patreon.com/fraudcast for all of the bonus episodes of our normal show, The Fraudcast, in which we talk about everything, movies, television, all that stuff. Vince, what's the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. Thanks so much for liking us, giving us, you know, 5 stars and a review on iTunes, which I assume you did. And until next season, don't stop believing.
Don't stop. Boom.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get juicy red, white, or black seedless grapes for $1.49 a pound with your card and a digital coupon. Then buy 2, get 2 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.